This is THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Network. On-demand audio for the world of golf like never before. Welcome to The Dean Has Spoken with your hosts, JB and The Dean.
Welcome, everyone, to THP Radio. I'm your host, JB, and today we have a new episode of The Dean Has Spoken. This show is co-hosted by none other than THP staff writer extraordinaire, Dean, and he could be found on the THP forum as well as on Twitter, at Dean of THP. Welcome.
Hey, Josh, it's good to be back. I feel like it's been a while since we've done one of these.
It's been a few weeks. The Dean Has Spoken is a new twist on your on-demand audio in the world of golf. We'll be discussing equipment, tour golf, the industry happenings, and anything else that strikes our fancy, with the key here being that the Dean of THP will always have the final word. The way the show works is easy. There's 5 topics, 10 arguments, but only one right answer, and because he is the Dean, he's going to let you know exactly what that is. Before we get started, I want to thank our sponsor, Encore Golf, for being part of The Dean Has Spoken. Encore Golf is more than a golf ball. It's about a lifestyle, and that's all about doing, being, and giving more. Be more with Encore. Now let's get this started. Are you ready?
I am ready. Let's do it. What do we have for topic number one?
Topic number one is about golf shoes. Spikes versus spikeless. Now, there's 2 sides of the story here, and they're pretty easy. It can be about look, comfort, or about traction. What does the Dean say about this ongoing debate?
Well, the biggest thing for myself is traction. I don't have the best footwork out there, so I tend to get a lot of slippage when I have some spikeless shoes that don't have enough grip to them. So I definitely prefer playing in spikes. You know me, though, there's always a, you know, but what if. I tend to wear a lot of spikeless shoes anyway. They're just really comfortable. I walk a lot. They're easy to walk in. A lot of them feel like, you know, pillows on your feet. But I'm still going to say, if I'm playing in a tournament and I have the choice between spikeless and spiked, I'm still grabbing the spiked pair of shoes out of my trunk.
It's interesting. You know, I've always said that I thought that spikes in a lot of ways were unnecessary, but I understand where you're coming from, and traction is king. And, you know, you have got the final word here, and you say if you're going to a tournament, you're going to choose spikes.
You know, the good thing is, just to, you know, go off of this a little bit, Josh, is the style difference. For a while, you could definitely spot the difference between a spiked pair of shoes style-wise and the spikeless. And I think companies are doing such a really good job now of kind of blending the lines or blurring the lines a little bit. So you can have a shoe that is spikeless, it looks spiked, and vice versa.
That's very true. And, you know, some of the companies who have been at the forefront of putting out different designs of each have now blended them. Like you said, I think of Puma Golf as an example, which they've done that with the, you know, Titan Tour and Titan Tour Ignite, both spike and spikeless. And yeah, there's some differences in style a little bit here and there, but it's not as drastic as it once was. And in the case of me, where I came from playing metal spikes, the spikeless shoes have really caught my eye, and it's almost exclusively what I wear now.
Yeah, it's they've come a long way. Like I said, I wear both for tournament conditions or really important round. I lean more towards the spikes, but, you know, both are very good.
Let's move on to topic number 2, and this is one that is ongoing as well, and this is about music on the golf course. For a sport that's all about silence and quiet and brought the golf clap to actually being, you know, like a real thing, Bluetooth speakers are making music accessible to the course. Is it acceptable or not?
It is acceptable in the right circumstances. Personally, I listen to music on the course when I'm out playing by myself for a solo round. It helps me relax. It keeps my mind from wandering a little bit. I just enjoy it. When I'm with a company of other golfers, most of the time music is turned off. I'd rather just talk with, you know, my fellow playing companions and, you know, get into the round that way. I don't really need the music to distract me. The other thing about it is it needs to be played at the right volume. And I know right then and there I sound like a really, really old man. But you can't have music blasting away on the golf course. Be respectful about it. If you're on the green listening to the music and the people can hear you on the tee box that's next to the green, then it's too loud. You need to turn it down. Adjacent fairways, you don't want that group to be distracted by your music that you're listening to. So the big thing is, it is acceptable, just be respectful and keep it at a proper level.
You know, that's actually a really good way of putting it, and there's not much debate there. I don't play music on the course. I prefer golf to be a social game. And because I don't play a lot as a single, that could be part of it. I usually like to talk to my playing partners and have a good time. But I totally get it. If somebody's playing alone, they might want to listen to that. They might want to listen to this podcast, for instance. So I completely understand it.
Yeah, it's okay. Like I said, I do it mostly when I'm by myself, or it's when I'm on the practice range. If I have the range to myself, I'll put the music on or I'll put headphones on. It's something I like to do, but if I'm playing with other people, usually the music is off.
Do you play a lot of Getting Jiggy With It by Will Smith so you can get your energy level up?
I like to say, we're going to Miami. That's my Will Smith song. The PGA Tour doesn't like that song anymore, apparently. They're leaving Miami, but I'll play some Will Smith. Why not?
I totally get it. You're taking your talents to South Beach. I get it.
South Beach.
Before we continue, I want to remind everybody that they can discuss these topics and all the topics on the THP forum with thousands of golfers every single day. And of course, you can follow, discuss, debate, and interact with both myself and the Dean of THP on Twitter, at THPGolf and at the Dean of THP. Third topic is one we've been talking about quite a bit. Nike Golf Marketing. They came on the scene a number of years ago. It's no longer a new golf company. Their big thing was the moving of the face angle. They were one of the first to do it, if not the first. The splash of Tiger Woods, the big signing of Rory McIlroy, and in the end, the hard goods side of the equation, it's just not selling equipment like you'd be expected. Tom Stites was brought in. Tom Stites has moved on, retired. They brought in Nate Radcliffe, who was their leader of innovation. And those who don't know it, Nate came from Cleveland Golf, where he put together a number of really good clubs over his tenure there. What do you think of what's going on there right now?
There's something amiss with them when it comes to the selling of hard goods, because if you look at the apparel, you know, the shoes, they tend to get a lot of good sales from those two departments, the soft goods side of things. I don't know where the miss is with the hard goods. They don't seem to be promoting the technology that they have. You mentioned the adjustable loft drivers. I still think that the Flex Loft adapter is the best adapter out there right now. There's some other ones that are really, really close, but personal preference, I still think that's the best one out there. That you don't see anything about that marketed. You see a lot of colors from Nike right now. You see the Photo Blue. Last year, everything was Volt. The year before that, it was Red. And I don't know why we're not seeing more from them, based on just the hard goods side of things.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting take and one that I kind of share. I do think it's a marketing issue, not as much an equipment issue. They went through a stretch where they were putting out some really top-notch equipment, good-looking equipment. You know, they're always going to be the detractors to Nike because of where they are and where they came from. They assume, they just bought their way into golf. They forget that, you know, they were then playing Titleist clubs and they were owned by Maker's Mark, you know, their parent company anyway. And, you know, TaylorMade was owned by Adidas and, you know, Cobra's owned by Puma and Titleist is now owned by Fila and so on and so forth. So that part of it, I think, is a lot overblown. But there are people who just don't like the brand. And I understand that. Listen, if you have a personal bias against something, all the power to you. If that makes you enjoy it, not enjoy it, whatever it is, I just want people to enjoy the game. But their marketing for golf has kind of become gone full circle and gone to their marketing for athletic wear and footwear. They market the golf clubs the way they market basketball shoes. And I don't think that works to the golfer. The golfer that's spending money right now is not the 20-something. It is the older demographic. And that demographic is not going to rush out to buy something because it has the swoosh on it that matches the color of their shoes, or that Jay-Z helped design the shoes. I'm making that up. I have no idea. I wouldn't know Jay-Z if he walked into my house, but I'm in the minority for sure. I do think it's a marketing message, though. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's definitely a marketing message. Like you say, it's just they tend to market more the athlete than the club. And you can see that that's why it's kind of generates the sales and the soft goods rather than hard goods. And going a little bit away from the clubs, we can look at just the golf bag. We had a really good review come up on our homepage about their new golf bag, the Hyper Adapt bag.
Fantastic product.
For a stand bag, it has a lot of innovation in it. Something that, you know, we don't see a lot of innovation like that in stand bags. They have the product, but they're not marketing it, and it really is too bad.
You know, we will move on to a different segment in a second, but one thing I wanted to touch on with this is when you look at golf products and other brands, the long saying was win on Sunday, register on Monday, meaning if a guy from their staff wins, the consumer goes out and buys their products. And I understand that. And I do think times have changed a little bit with how fast marketing is in the digital marketing world and everybody having a voice. However, those companies, their marketing is about the products, and then they let the tour players speak of those products. Nike has gone a different way, which is their marketing is about the tour players, and they hope the tour players speak about the products, and they're not. There's not too many guys on tour who are actually not in a marketing session out there talking about the products. In fact, outside of maybe Phil, I can't think of anybody who does. So, you know, if you're marketing a tour player and the tour player doesn't speak of the products, it's just wearing a logo, I think that Nike has a real identity crisis here, and I think they need to figure that out. And I think if they do, they can make it. They obviously have Nike behind them. I mean, it's not hard to figure that out. The products are fine. Nate knows how to design a great golf club. We know that. So It'll be interesting to follow for the next 18 to 24 months, I say, is the threshold. And at that 24-month mark, if the numbers fall back even further than they are, I think we see major changes there.
It's going to be interesting, like you say, the next year and a half to 2 years. We'll see what happens. Products are good. You know, we saw the drivers, they were liked at Club Clash. You know, I know I've tested and reviewed a set of the Vaporfly Pro irons. I thought they were a really good set. And we mentioned the bag already that, you know, that review is up that James did. They've got the good products. Hopefully the marketing kind of gets behind the product a little more, away from the athlete and more about the product itself. And we'll see what Nike does with that going forward.
Let me ask you something about that before we go on. And I know we're running behind here, but you reviewed the Nike irons, the Vaporfly Pro. You liked the irons. Yep. They're priced well, you know, in accordance. Outside of the color of them being a black finish, if you're going into the store looking for that category, what would draw you in? You're competing against Strixon 545, Callaway Apex, M2 Tour. You're competing against companies that are marketing the golf club, or that it stands out dynamically based on looks and the technology packed into that golf club. And then you have these, and it's, you know, Tiger and Rory on a commercial. I just don't see it. Am I missing it?
No, you're not. There's no draw to them when you walk into the store. And, you know, throughout the review process, I would have some people on the range hit them, and I'd ask them the same thing. You know, you're going in to buy a golf club or a set of irons. You're taking 3, 4, maybe 5 sets with you to your hitting booth, and then you rattle off the options like you just did. What's the draw to pull these? Outside of looks, you know, you don't hear anything about them.
You really do have to go into that, assuming that number one, you enjoy Nike as a brand, which is great.
Yep.
I do too. And that you're going in with the aspect that you think that's your set.
Yeah, you had to have that premeditated before you walked into the store that you were looking to try them, which is a shame because, you know, I've put them up against some of those other sets that you've mentioned and they fared very, very well.
Dean, did you know there's a golf ball company right there in upstate New York?
I did not.
Buffalo, to be exact, and it's Encore.
Oh.
They are the first company that produced a golf ball with a hollow metal core and have really stepped outside the box in their thinking. Encore balls, the Avant and the Caliber, and I know you've been playing the Caliber recently, are designed to give you more. More of what you need, with more distance, more feel, more touch, and more spin. If you want to give them a try, check out their complete line on their website, www.encoregolf.com. Are you ready for the fourth topic?
I am ready. What do we have, Josh?
This is one that's going back from the days of the beginning of the THP forum. Insert versus non-insert putters. For years, it was about the squishy soft inserts versus the milled putters. And to me, it really goes back to the Odyssey White Hot XG versus every other putter on the market. But now we're seeing different metals used for inserts. And, you know, we've seen aluminum and copper and all kinds of different things. And the ability with inserts to really hone in on the sound dynamic that plays such a role in feel. So what does the Dean have to say about that topic?
You know, make me smile. You say all the way back to the beginning of THP time.
No, we're closer to a decade than we are 5 years now.
It's something. And I remember way back then, the talk was, well, for the putter to be soft, it has to be milled, which it really couldn't be farther from the truth, could it? You know, with all the technology that, exactly that these companies right. have, with all the technology that these companies have on inserts, honing in the sound, they could make that insert much more softer than, you know, somebody can from milling a face on a steel putter.
That's the God's honest truth. And now we're seeing that I actually think that the milled putters are going to try to play catch up in a little ways. And it's not the right term because different sound techniques have been used before and sound slots have been used before. But you're going to see some of the name brands and the bigger brands start using that more and more because there's a sound that people like and they've gravitated towards a lot of different inserts. So is there a preference and do you think that one is better than the other?
I don't think one is better than the other because I think they're, you know, they both get you to where you want to be as a golfer. You're looking for something that's going to give you a nice true roll. And we're seeing companies out there that have a milled putter that's giving you a very, very nice true roll. You know, look at Even Roll, what they're doing with Garen Reif. And there's a very good video explanation from it on our homepage about, you know, getting a real true roll right off the face. That's a milled putter. But you can look at what Odyssey's done too with their inserts the last few years, and they'll show you something that's extremely similar with how good the ball rolls off the face. So it just comes down to feel. Sound is a huge part of it. I tend to lean more towards milled putters, but I have, you know, three or four insert putters here that I've played within the last month. So I could go either way on it, but I tend to lean towards the milled putters.
My opinion is neither here nor there, and I don't think one is better. I do think that a insert putter offers the creator a larger gamut to move things around with, and mm-hmm. to me that means fine-tuning. So I tend to side with that, but like I said, it's a preference like at all clubs, and it should be. Golf's fun, and it's supposed to remain that way.
It is, and I like what we've seen on the milled side of things. You know, if you look at, you know, I mentioned an Even Roll with the face that Garen Reif has on those and the face design now on Toulon's. Scotty Cameron's gone with a really deep mill pattern on it. And if you go back at Nike, that was one that I played for a while. The Method, you know, had the grooves on the front to help give you a nice roll. And that stuff affects sound a little bit too. So it's not just, you know, looking down and milled putter like an old Ping Answer and getting that. You do get some more technology now in the face of those putters as well.
Before we continue, I want to recap where we stand on our first four topics of the day. We talked about golf shoes and the spikes and spikeless debate, and Dean basically stood in the middle there. We talked about music on the golf course, and the Dean told you it's acceptable under certain limits. We talked about Nike golf marketing, and we both agree that something needs to change. And we talked about putters just recently, and there is no perfect answer, and it's about preference. We're on to a fifth topic and one that you and I have gone back and forth on for a long time here. And even before the show, before we pressed record, we were talking about this. Small golf ball companies, and I don't mean small in size. I do mean it from a company standpoint, but not the actual product. Last year, we saw a number of companies drop from the sky claiming incredible golf balls at bargain prices. Then we kind of saw the hammer dropped on a lot of them for a number of reasons, including patent infringement by a few. There are still some out there, though, and let's talk about them. We have Snell, we have Vice, we have Encore. What do you know about these, and what can you tell our listeners?
I'm going to start with Encore, just because that's one that I've played within the last week. I've been playing the Caliber ball. You know, it's a $29.99 ball. It's got a pretty good feel to it. It's got some good grab to it. And the problem that... maybe not the problem, the predicament that Encore is going to have that Vice and Snell have are getting the ball in the hands of the consumer. Because I have not played this ball yet until, you know, they showed up recently for review. And now I've got them in play and I'm inclined to give them out to some people and get them in those hands and see what happens with that. You know, the same thing needs to happen with Snell and with Vice that... if you can get them in play, I think it's a good thing for those companies. Pricing-wise, they're all somewhat similar. I mean, the Encore, the Caliber is $29.99. The Vice is $34.95, the Vice Pro.
Yeah, and the one thing about the Vice is if you buy like five or six dozen, it does go down about $10 a dozen.
Yeah, they give you a discount. So if you buy five, you know, it goes down to $25 a dozen, which is good. You know, that helps. You know, and the Snell golf ball is right around $30, $30 or $32. Those companies are good. They just need to get the ball in the consumer's hand.
You know, it's an interesting, I'll say dilemma, but that's for lack of a better word. You know, I'll use Snell first. You know, Dean Snell is obviously a smart guy. He was part of the Pro V1 team, and he's been at TaylorMade, was at TaylorMade for a long time, developed the Penta and many others. I think the marketing message that it's Dean Snell and you want to try it because of that is not the reach he's going to get. That would work for an older demographic to me, and this is all just my opinion. And work well, for that matter. In fact, you know, the people at the country clubs we visit, they, you know, when I mention it to them and they want to try it out, that's very interesting to them. The problem is those people aren't throughout social media wanting to try new things. So the Dean Snell talk doesn't do a lot for the younger consumer who's like, oh, you know, if I wanted to do that, I don't want to play a poor man's Pro V1, so to speak. And that's how it's being labeled. And that's a real shame because it's a really high quality product. I'm rooting for them. I think they're going to do things. Now, Encore is unique, and obviously they're partners with us on this show because they tried something different. It's not, hey, this is just like this, but less money. They tried something to offer perimeter weighting on a ball for better putting, first to put hollow metal core in there. It does sound a little unique. I actually like it. I'm really looking forward to what they do next year. They're bringing a tour ball, you know, a urethane-covered premium ball to the market next year, and I'm really looking forward to that. Vice is the one that gets me because I've tried them a couple of different times. Their packaging is hysterical. Like, I picked up one, and I think it was the Pro Plus, and it had a tiger or a leopard on it. It was quality. Good ball. Really good ball. They're not available for me anywhere locally. When I went to the website and it said $25 a dozen, I was like, yeah, I can get on board with this. And I realized I had to buy five dozen to get that price. $35 a dozen, still decent. I can get, you know, from the local stores, usually last year's version or the year before, if they're premium ball for the same price. That doesn't mean the Vice isn't as good. It's strictly a convenience thing for me. I know that a lot of the modern generation prefers to buy things online and just have it arrive at their door. For a lot of things, I'm like that. For golf stuff, I don't know. It's tangible. I want to go to a store and see it. So I'm rooting for all of these companies because I think there's room for everybody. But Encore to me stands out, and it's going to sound terrible because, like I said, they're a partner of the show, but there's something there from a technology standpoint that's marketing. It's something different that no other golf ball has, whereas the other ones are similar to other golf balls in the market. Doesn't mean they're less quality. They're actually very high quality. So from that aspect, I can kind of see the marketing standpoint. I don't know. I'm looking at things a little differently than I guess the average golfer would.
Yeah. I mean, the Encore ball, you know, the caliber, it's really meant for somebody like me, who I play a B330RX. It's meant for somebody with a swing speed below 105. With the caliber, they're saying with a driver swing below 100 miles per hour, you know, it's got the lower compression, which is 80 compression. It's different. It's got the metal core. It's got a story to it, which is really nice and a good tech story to tell. And I'm like you now. I look for those stories. They kind of get me excited.
Yeah, you know, I go back to Bridgestone Golf. Bridgestone Golf drew me in because way back when, because there's a tech story. Hey, we're not going to tell you what the best ball for you is. We're going to show you, and we're going to do a fitting, and we have scientists. That drew me in. Callaway did it last year with the ball that changed the ball, you know, where they decided to change things and bring it way down and, you know, do different things. I don't know. There's a whole lot. I'm a big fan of tech stories, and Encore has that. These other two, it's not that they don't have it. It's that the message isn't clear to me. You know, on one hand, it's, you know, this guy who's Dean's a great guy, and I've known him for a long time. He developed other great products. You want to try these, the price is right. And Vice is kind of crazy, kind of kooky in a way. But I want to hear more about the technology.
Yeah, I'm like you. I'm really into the tech stories behind, you know, these golf balls and the equipment that we see come in for review. I really appreciate a good tech story that's easy to talk about, that's easy to understand, and it's fun to learn about. So I think those companies, you know, the smaller golf ball companies, once they start pushing that, you know, word gets out, I'm rooting for all of them. I like the idea. And, you know, a golf ball that can perform and maybe save me some cash in my pocket, that, you know, that's a win-win.
I agree with you. I'm rooting for all of them. I hope they make it. And again, like you, the tech story's there now. But before we sign off on that segment, will they make it?
Yeah, why not? One of them will. I'll say that one of the three will make it, and we'll put the, we'll say 7 years, seven to 10 years.
Seven years is a good number.
I think that's a good number. I would say one of the three will. I don't know which one it will be. I'm just playing the odds on that one, that one of the three will make it, because we've seen, like you said, last year, the year before, we saw a lot of other, I'm going to refer to them as pop-up golf ball companies, come along. And there's only, I think, two of those left of the ones that, you know, came in at the same time. So I'm going to say one of these three will make it 7 years.
It's funny you mentioned that. I'm going to swing off topic here for a second. There's a club company that I call, in some ways, it's a pop-up club company. And the only reason I call it that is the guy behind the brand, like, sent out a message a year or so ago on social media that he's been away from golf and he doesn't know what's going on in clubs. Can somebody educate him on what's new and fun in irons? And now he's like an R&D guy selling irons, supposedly. And I relate it to, it's a funny world out there sometimes. But I'm rooting for all the companies, because choice is a good thing.
Choice is a good thing, and finding a budget for everybody, that, like I said, it's a win-win.
There you have it, gang. Another episode of The Dean Has Spoken is in the books. You can join us on the THP forum to discuss and debate everything we talked about here. And of course, follow along on Twitter at THP Golf and at Dean of THP. Don't forget to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Hackers Paradise channel so you never miss a new episode of The Dean Has Spoken, The Golf Industry Uncut, or our new show On the Tee Box. And don't forget to leave a review with your thought right in iTunes and let us know if you agree with The Dean. We love the engagement and want to know if you agree with him or not. So for myself, and of course Dean, we hope you enjoyed this new episode of The Dean Has Spoken. Bye, everybody.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for golf.